Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Aw. Justin, nothing but love for you. Don't let that door beat you down, though. Aw, buddy. Man, feel bad for Justin. But don't feel too bad. He had kids all the other services, so that's good. Thank you guys for being here at this service. We greatly appreciate it. This will always be a lesser attended service than our other two, and there's a reason for that. That for America, for whatever reason, there is only a couple times that are the optimum time. So it's somewhere between 9 and 11. So the fact that you guys are here, this is a huge win for us because our other two services are more full. So you are opening up seats for our first-time guests to come at the times where most Americans are going to go to church. And so we greatly appreciate and value you guys. Thank you for making this happen. My name is Rob, by the way. I'm one of the pastors at Next Level Church, and very honored for you to be here today. I would like to invite you to check out YouVersion. It's a free app that'll help you get a little bit more out of what you're about to experience. All the scriptures I'm going to cover are in there. There's a question of the week. You can do some online giving. You can give prayer requests. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there. So go ahead and open up your tablets or smartphones to YouVersion, or if you're new, follow the steps up on the screen. Before we dive into our topic for the day, I did just want to highlight next week, because next Sunday really is a big day for us. Next Sunday is when we are celebrating as a church Christmas. And so it's on the 20th. It's a few days before Christmas. We're getting the jump on actual Christmas Day. That means we don't have a Christmas Eve service or a service on Christmas. We are celebrating Christmas next Sunday. So there's going to be a little bit extra flair, a little bit extra things happening. And this is a great chance for you to invite some friends and family to come with you. But I really wanted to focus, because next week on our Christmas service, a tradition that we have around here is that every cent of money that is given at our Christmas service does not go to us. It goes out, that we give it away. And it goes along with one of our core values. It's God's kingdom, not ours. That we want to build not just Next Level Church and not Next Level Church's name and fame. We want to help build God's kingdom around the world. And we have an opportunity to partner with some missionaries, Chandler and Jamie. And just so you know how we picked them, Chandler is a guy that I've known for years. He was in my youth group years ago. He grew up in the youth group with our worship pastor, Stephen Haggerty, and him and his wife are currently in the States. They have a goal to raise funds to try to get overseas to be full-time missionaries, and we want to help them get there. And so if you want to help out, here's what I would just like to ask you to do. Simply this week, just ask God, God, how would you like us to help? Would you like us to participate? I know funds are tight. Not everyone can participate. Not everyone can do that. There's no judgment. We totally understand. But would you just ask God, God, how would you like me to help out in this? And understand that we're really asking for you to give above and beyond what you would normally give to help make Next Level Church run. So this isn't what you would, you know, if you normally give $5, this isn't that $5 going to them. It's giving above and beyond to help them get to the mission field. And the goal that I have for us as a church, that with all three services, I would love for us to send $6,000 to them to help get them closer to the mission field. So if you just take some time this week just to pray and say, hey, God, how would you like me to participate? One of the reasons we do this at our Christmas service is because I want to communicate to all of our guests that are going to be here next week that we are not just about your money. We're not just about collecting things and getting rich ourselves. That if you give on that day, next Sunday, we're sending it out to someone else. And so I don't want people to say they just want my money or that you know, all they care about is my funds. No, we really do care about people, and we want to send someone out to be a missionary. So be praying about that this week. Today we conclude our series, The New Rules of Surviving Christmas Dinner. And our mission at Next Level Church is to love Jesus, love people, and make a difference. And it's the middle portion of that mission statement that we've been focused on in this series, loving people. The truth is, most of us did not take a class on how to love people, and all of us have some awkward, weird, annoying people in our life. In fact, you probably have some people that you would classify as just a wee bit crazy, just a little bit off, and most likely you're related to those people. So what do you do when someone that you are related to is a little... Don't look at your spouse right now, by the way. This is not the appropriate time to elbow your spouse or look at your spouse. Some of you are related to someone, or you're going to invite someone over to dinner. Maybe it's a neighbor. Maybe it's a coworker. Maybe you'll be at a staff Christmas party. And you're going to look at them and say, you are so annoying. You are so... How do you not know how much you bother the rest of us? And because we didn't take a class in how to get along with people, this series is really trying to help us learn to love people, specifically the people that we don't always get along with, specifically difficult people. And this is not a series that you can just listen to. If you've come over the last 4 weeks, thank you for coming. Thank you for making church a priority. I greatly appreciate it. But if you've come over the last 4 weeks and you just sat there and you nodded your head and you think that your relationships will be better simply because you've heard something, you're wrong. You are off. The only way to get something truly out of this series is this is something you have to put some effort in. You have to take what we've talked about and you have to apply it in your relationships. So I want to just review quickly the rules that we've covered, because we started this series 4 weeks ago and some of you were here, and I want you to help me review, and here's what we're going to do it. I'm going to ask for a rule, and if you know the rule, raise your hand. Don't shout anything out, just raise your hand. And if you get it right, I'm going to reward you. I'm going to reward your note-taking skills, your memory, by giving out a Kit Kat. That's right. You get a Kit Kat if you get it right. So we kicked this thing off 4 weeks ago with rule number one. Who remembers rule number one? Oh, I saw that hand. That was so quick.
I will choose to believe the best.
Bam, there it is. Give it up for him for answering that. We are not going to be stingy with our applause in this service. Even though you didn't get the Kit Kat, you can celebrate that they got a Kit Kat. And maybe if they're nice, they'll let you bite some of it. Well, rule number one is I will choose to believe the best. This is an important rule for you to remember and you to apply, because you as a human being, me as a human being, all of us as human beings, we are wired to believe the worst about other people. It is how you are created. You are wired to believe the worst. When it comes to yourself, you believe the best. When you're late, when you let other people down, when you don't meet the deadline, there's always a good reason, there's always an excuse. But when someone else is late, when they don't meet the deadline, when they let you down, you automatically attack their character. They are a selfish person. They don't take care of my needs. They are not thinking of anyone else. We attack other people. And so you have to choose in that moment to believe the best about other people. This reminds me of a story that Dear Abby tells. I don't know if you ever read Dear Abby or have ever read any of her stuff, but the story goes that there was a son who was getting ready to graduate from college, and he went to his dad and he said, "Dad, for my graduation gift, I want this car." And his dad was really well off, so he knew his dad could afford it. And he had a specific car in mind, and he gave his dad all the information. He gave him the dealer, the price of the car, the exact car and model that he wanted. He gave him everything that his dad needed to know. Well, come the day of graduation, the son graduates, and he ends up back at his house. And he's standing in his dad's office, and he's expecting and ready to receive the keys to this car. When he gets a package from his dad hands him this gift. It is a weirdly shaped gift. It is not the shape of car keys. It is a little bit too big, but it's definitely way smaller than an actual car. So the son is kind of skeptical, and he opens up the gift, and inside the gift is a Bible. It isn't the car keys that he was looking for. And he is so upset at that moment, he takes the Bible and he says, "I asked you for one thing," and he slams the Bible down and he runs out of the house, and he's just so angry and he's disgusted with his dad. Well, because of that, there was a rift in their relationship, and they didn't talk for years. His son was so upset with the dad that he wouldn't call him, and the dad was so hurt by his son's words that they literally didn't have communication for years. The son goes off and ends up becoming a really well-off, wealthy businessman himself. And after years that have gone by, one day he gets a message that his dad has passed away. And he hasn't mended the relationship. He hasn't talked to his dad since that day that he stormed out. But he got word that he needed to go home quickly to help sort his dad's affairs and to help figure out the will and where everything's going to go. And so he goes home. And when he's at his house that he grew up in, he walks into his dad's office and he sees that on his dad's desk, he had been storing this Bible that he had given him. And so he decides to open up the Bible, and when he's flipping through the Bible, he sees that his dad had underlined a passage of Scripture. The passage of Scripture was Matthew 7:11, and it said, "And if ye, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more shall your heavenly Father, which is in heaven, give to those who ask him?" And as soon as he read that, from the back of the Bible fell some papers onto the ground. He bent down to pick up the papers, and what he saw, it was the deed for the car that he had wanted. And it said on top, "Paid in full." His dad had bought him the car, but he was trying to help him know that good things really come from God. And if the son really appreciates this gift, he should really appreciate the love of God. But the son, his expectation wasn't met. And because his expectation wasn't met, he believed the worst about his dad. And that instant caused a rift in their relationship. Now, that is a fictitious story, okay? That is from Dear Abby. That is not a true story. In fact, if that was a true story, can I just tell you how it would go down in my family? If I gave my son the deed to a car, and it was stuck in a Bible, and he slammed the Bible down in anger. I would have picked that Bible up and hit him upside the head. So let me tell you, son, this is what's going to go down. In this Bible are the words, honor your father and mother, and there's also a deed for the car, which I'm going to sell now because of your attitude. But let me get some things straight with you, boy. I wouldn't have allowed that rift to happen, to go on for years. I would have tried to settle it then. And even though it's a fictitious story, I think there's something that we can relate to. How many of your relationships have caused a rift because you assume the worst about another human being? That you assume that they did it on purpose. You assume that they cut you off in traffic. You assume that they were late again because they were being lazy. You assume that they didn't turn it in on time. That you assume the worst about a human being and it caused a rift. That you, as a Christian, are called to believe the best about another human being. That you give them the benefit of the doubt. But that led to week number two. And does anyone remember rule number two? Oh, hands up fast. We'll go with you, front row.
I will talk to the person, not about the person.
Love it. Good notes. There you go. You get a Kit Kat. I will talk to the person and not about the person. The temptation for us is when someone hurts us to go and talk to everybody but the person who has hurt us. There's some pride involved. There, your ego's involved. Maybe you're afraid of confrontation. It is difficult to talk to the person who has hurt you. But if you want to solve the problem, the only person that can solve the problem is the person who has wronged you. Now, let me rewind just a second here. There are times when you do talk to someone else about a problem. Specifically, if you're married, like for me, there are times when I will go to my wife and I'll say, hey, there's this issue happening. Let me just tell you what happened and get your perspective of it. And often I do it because I tend to be more sensitive and I want to hear, am I blowing this out of proportion? Am I being sensitive about something? Is this really as big of a deal as I think it is? And oftentimes she'll help set me straight. But when you go to someone else, you're not going to them to make your case. You're not going to them and say, let me tell you what they did. Can you believe the way that they treated me or talked to me? You are not building a case. You are going and asking them for advice to figure out if you should talk to them. And you should pick just one person that you trust. Maybe it is your spouse or a close friend, but you are not constantly downloading how bad the people you work with are, or how bad your boss is, or how bad your other friends are. You're not constantly talking bad about other people, specifically behind their back. That is an unhealthy relationship. Healthy relationships deal with conflict. And that led to rule number three. Anyone remember rule number three? They're going to give it to you. No one else is even raising their hand. That was the easiest to remember. It was last week. Go ahead. In their shoes. I like that you guys are sharing your same notes. That was nice. Well done. Oh, look out. There you go. I love it. Well done. Yes. Rule number three is I will put myself in their shoes. This is a rule of empathy that I will try to give them empathy. I will try to figure out, even if I don't agree with their behavior, I'll try to figure out what is causing this behavior. Why are they acting this way? Now, let me make sure you understand something. When you show someone empathy, you are not excusing someone else's behavior. There are still consequences to bad behavior. When my kids act out and they misbehave, the empathy is more for me than for them. It is so that I don't blow my cool, so that I'm not yelling and screaming, so that I don't act and make the situation worse. I try to put myself in my kids' shoes. But if they act out, if they hit, if they yell, if they scream, there's still consequences. They still go to timeout. They still have to suffer the consequences of bad behavior. But the empathy is so that I don't get bitter at them. So that I don't say, oh, they're just an evil person. There's nothing good in them. I try to put myself in their shoes and say, okay, my son didn't nap today. So that's why he is on edge. That's why he got so cranky. Or it's close to mealtime, so he's a little bit hungry. Or there's a reason why they're acting this way. I'm going to try to put myself in their shoes so that I don't blow up and get extra offended. So that I can deal with the problem at hand. And this leads to rule number four. Anyone ready to learn about rule number four? Let me hear you. You're ready. All right. Rule number four. I will set up rules of engagement. I will set up rules of engagement. Conflict is so difficult in relationships because emotions are on high. And if you don't set up some type of rules of engagement, you'll go into a fight or to an argument angry. And when you're angry and you try to solve a problem, it's not good for anyone. Being angry and trying to solve a problem with another human being is the equivalent of you being drunk trying to do your own taxes. It's not going to work out well for anyone. Some of you didn't laugh at that. Maybe it's because you've actually tried your taxes when you were drunk. I couldn't tell that reaction. I would not recommend being drunk doing your own taxes or being drunk in general. But for some of us, the way we handle problems is, oh, we're just going to yell and scream it out. We're just going to, when we get mad, we're just going to let them know how we feel. We're just going to tell them exactly how it is. And that never solves a problem. That puts a wedge in between the relationship. If you want to have healthy conflict, you've got to set up some rules of engagement. And it's kind of like this. Does anyone watch boxing? I don't know. Anyone watch boxing? One person kind of sort of watches. There you go. Two people watch boxing. I don't watch boxing, but I have seen every Rocky movie, so I think that counts. I love the Rocky movies, including the newest one, Creed. And I think that Rocky movies are a documentary, so I believe that everything in them is true. And in the Rocky movies, between, right before the big fight, a referee stands between these big fighters and gives some rules of engagement. And it's always interesting to me because the whole point of boxing is to punch another human being so hard that you knock them out. And yet, in the midst of this fight, the referee will say, no rabbit punches, no punches below the belt. When I say break, I want a clean break. In the event of a knockdown, you will be directed to go to a neutral corner. Are there any questions? You are both professionals, so I expect a good, clean fight. Protect yourself at all times. Okay, touch gloves and come out at the bell. I love that line in there. You are both professionals, so I expect a good, clean fight. In boxing, you can actually win the respect of your opponent when you fight within the rules. That a good, clean fight. You may have gone in there as enemies, or you may have gone in there trying to knock them out, but when the other person fights hard and fights fair and fights within the rules, they earn your respect. And how amazing would it be if you had relational conflict and at the end of it, the person actually ended up respecting you more than even before the conflict? In order to get that, you've got to set up some rules of engagement. What are the things we are going to do? What are the things we are not going to do when a conflict happens? When I'm angry, when you're angry, when someone hasn't met our expectations, what are going to be the defining rules that we're going to have? The idea for this and our text that's going to drive us comes from a guy by the name of James. And James was Jesus' brother. And the thing I love about James is actually one of the people in the Bible that helps me hold on to my faith in God. There are times when I kind of doubt or say, hey, were all those miracles true? Jesus, did you really exist? Were you just a man? Or like, did you really die again? And there are times when sometimes I have doubt when life circumstances are hard or I kind of question things. And James is a guy that helps me hold on to my faith. The reason is because when we're first introduced to James, he does not believe that Jesus is the Messiah. I don't judge James for this. Like, in fact, I wouldn't judge you. If one of your siblings claimed to be the Messiah, you wouldn't believe him. You wouldn't be like, yep, totally, I can see that in you, you know? I totally can see how you'd be the savior of the world. No, if one of your siblings said that they were God, you would say you were cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Like, there is no way you're God. And so James did not believe in Jesus. What caused James to believe in Jesus is that his brother said he was going to die, and 3 days later, he was going to come back from the grave. And the fact that James saw his brother and experienced his brother rise from the dead caused him to believe in him. And so James went from being a doubter to being one of the first pastors who led the early Christian movement that was the church. And so in James' letter to the early Christians, to the church, he writes this in James 3, verse 13. If you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom. If you are wise and you understand God's ways, don't just talk about it. Don't just tell people that you're a Christian. Don't just change your Facebook status to Christian. Don't just say, yep, I'm a Christian. That's just who I am. No, if you're a Christian, you prove it by the way that you live your life. Now, we're all going to make mistakes. James isn't saying that you have to be perfect, but he is saying that if you truly believe in who God is, he changes you from the inside out. And you do good works. You don't do good works to make God love you. You do good works because God loves you. And James says, if you're wise and you understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life. Do good works with humility that comes from wisdom. Now, I love the wording of this, that you do good works with humility, and the humility comes from wisdom. It's as if when you master and you start to master wisdom, the byproduct of that is humility. And I think this is interesting because when we as humans master something, typically it comes with pride. Like when you start to get really good at something and you start to believe, like, I'm really good at this, you tend to overestimate how good you are. And you start to say, yeah, I'm not only good, I'm the best. I'm one of the best. I'm awesome at this. I'm the man. I'm the woman. It can be anything. If you play a video game over time and you start to master it, you start to say, I am really good at that. I am great. Mastering something comes with pride. Maybe it's at your job. You think, man, I've done my job for so long and I'm good at my job. I can do my job in my sleep. I am the best at my job. I am so good at my job. Whatever it is, whenever you master it, it comes with pride. But James says when you start to master wisdom, it comes with humility. And I think that's because when you start to master wisdom, it's really showing that you know what helps you be wise. It's not because you're a good person or you're a great person or you even understand things. It is because of the grace of God. But as you gain wisdom in what it means to walk with God, it comes with humility, because if it were not for the grace of God, you would totally jack up your life. I love this idea of wisdom. It comes from Eugene Peterson. He gives this definition. He's an author. He says this: wisdom is the biblical term for on earth as it is in heaven, everyday living. Wisdom is the art of living skillfully in whatever actual conditions we find ourselves. I love that term. That wisdom is the art of living skillfully in whatever actual conditions we find ourselves. Wisdom is when your life is falling apart, you're still acting in a way that is honoring God. In the midst, just think how different your confrontations would be if in the midst of a conflict, you were able to skillfully navigate through that conflict. That's wisdom. James says that wisdom is what comes, and you'll get humility with it. Wisdom is the art of living skillfully in whatever actual conditions we find ourselves in. James then goes on to tell us what wisdom is not, and to tell us what we should not have in the midst of our conflicts. And look at what he says, James 3, 14 through 16. He says, "But if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind." So James says, listen, if there's some selfishness going on, if there's some selfish ambition, if there's something wrong going on, don't cover it up. Don't try to justify it away. Don't rationalize it. Don't try to say that you're better than you really are. You've got to be honest about it, because selfishness is never of God. Selfishness is evil, and in fact, he says that it is demonic. And I love how he ends this. He says, whenever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. So let me ask you a question. In what areas of your life are there disorder? Is it in your finances? Is it with your health? Is it with my health? Is it with relationships? Wherever there is disorder in your life, James says it's because of selfishness. Selfishness leads to disorder. And when someone is fighting with each other, I can promise you that someone is being selfish. When a conflict's not being solved and the conflict is being risen and people are fighting against one another, one or both people in the midst of a conflict are being incredibly selfish. And James says, wherever there is selfishness, there's going to be disorder. You can have conflict and actually bring order to your life, but you got to get rid of the selfishness that's within. When you are more concerned with being right than solving a problem, you are wrong. When you are more concerned with being right than solving a problem, you are wrong. Oftentimes in a conflict, we become more concerned with being right than actually fixing the problem. Let me just build a case on why I'm right and you're wrong. Let me just give you some examples of why I'm right and you're wrong. Let me just raise my voice, because you obviously didn't hear me the first time because I told you why I wasn't wrong. So let me say it a little bit louder to make sure you can hear me, right? When you're in a conflict and you care more about being right than solving the problem, you're wrong. The way to handle a conflict is to figure out what is the solution to the problem and come out friends on the other side. It is not just to beat the other person up so that they submit and say, yeah, you're right, I'm totally wrong. It's try to figure out a solution. What is going to fix the conflict that we're having, and what is going to fix it not just for a moment but for long term? When you are more concerned with being right than solving a problem, you are wrong. Last Christmas, we as a staff were throwing a party here at the church, and so we had to clear out all these chairs in the auditorium, and we have a small staff, and so it was just a handful of us in here taking out all these chairs, and we would stack the chairs into stacks of seven and then wheel them down the hallway and put them in one of the kids' classrooms. And while this was going on, since it was the Christmas season, we were talking about Christmas things. What's your favorite Christmas food? What's your favorite Christmas song? And then we started talking about favorite Christmas movies. And for some reason, every year around Christmas, I end up in this debate that I like to argue about it, but I don't understand why it's a debate, because to me, it's a black or white issue. To me, there is no argument against it. The argument, the debate, is whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie. in my world, I feel like Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Like, it takes place at Christmas time. His wife's at a Christmas party. He's trying to reunite with his wife. There's Christmas music in it. In fact, the very first terrorist that he kills, he writes on his sweatshirt, "Ho, ho, ho, now I have a machine gun." Nothing says Christmas more than that. I don't know how you feel about Die Hard. I don't know if you hate it. I don't know if you think it's rubbish. I don't know if you love it. But I find myself arguing, debating about whether or not it's a Christmas movie. So we're in this room, we're stacking chairs, and I get into a debate with one of our staff members, Crystal, and I am passionate that Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and she is passionate that Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. And so we are sitting there in this engaged argument, and it's all fun and games. Neither one of us are getting our feelings hurt, but we're both like just kind of shouting back and forth, trying to prove our case. And only thing I'm concerned about in that moment is convincing her that I am right. I'm not listening to her. Like, her points are just ridiculous. Like, I am just passionately proving to her why Die Hard is a Christmas movie. And in the midst of this arguing, neither one of us noticed that Nancy, who's helping us move the chairs, took a pile of 7 chairs, and as she tried to lift it, the whole chairs fell over on her. And neither of us noticed this. In fact, another staff member noticed that Nancy was underneath the chairs and came over and like picked them up. And we never, to this day, I never saw Nancy underneath chairs. And I never saw the chairs being lifted up over her. All I knew is that Crystal was wrong. I was right. I was going to convince her that Die Hard was a Christmas movie. In a conflict, so often when you're consumed with yourself, you forget how your actions are impacting everyone else. And there is chaos going around because of your actions. And oftentimes you miss the fact that your words do impact others. So your goal in an argument, in a conflict, is not just to win, it's to be aware of your surroundings, to help someone come up with a solution, because people get hurt when you don't pay attention. And James goes on to say, to tell us what wisdom from God looks like. Look at what he says in James 3, 17 through 18. But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is also peace-loving. So the wisdom from God, the wisdom from heaven, is peace-loving. Has anyone ever described in the middle of an argument that you're having, man, you love peace. You love bringing peace into this thing. Man, you're just all about peace. James says it's gentle at all times. The wisdom from God is gentle at all times. When I start to feel attacked in an argument, I'm not very gentle. I start to raise my voice and I start to get defensive and I start to want to prove why I'm right and why they're wrong, but it's gentle at all times. It's willing to yield to others. How different would your conflict be if you say, okay, hey, we disagree, but I'm going to yield to you. I've done enough talking. Let me just listen to what you have to say. Let me get to the heart of what you're trying to say. It is full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. And those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. James says that when you do these things, when you're pouring into your relationship, when you're showing mercy, when you're bringing peace, when you're trying to put the other person above yourself, you are sowing seeds of peace. I want to look at this last line one more time because I think it is worded so perfectly. James writes, those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. If you want to reap a harvest of righteousness in your relationships, you will constantly be sowing seeds of peace. If there is lots of conflict in your relationships, guess what kind of seed you're sowing? It's not peace. You are sowing selfishness. You are sowing bitterness. You are sowing that you want to be right over solving a problem. But in your relationships where there's peace, even in the midst of conflict, it's because you've intentionally sowed peace into the relationship. James, if you've ever read the book of James, I don't know if you have or not, but I would encourage you to. It's an awesome book, and I love James because he just says what's on his mind. It's very clear. There are some books in the Bible that I read it and I'm just like, God help me, this makes no sense to me. Like, I don't know what language they're speaking. I can't relate to what they're saying. But James, he is black and white. He is just like, look, don't be an idiot. You just need to do this or don't do that. And like, I really can relate to James. And oftentimes in James, he is giving an idea that he got from his brother. And one of Jesus' most famous sermons was a Sermon on the Mount. And in Jesus' sermon in Matthew 5:9, Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. You want to know what's going to cause people to say that you're a child of God? It's not what you say, and it's not how you say it. It's how you bring peace into the world. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. People, when they think of you, when they see you, when they interact with you, in the midst of a conflict, the way that you handle it, they will say, man, you are a child of God. This word blessed that Jesus used, a better translation for it would be happy. And if you're looking for a formula to be happy, Jesus gives a whole sermon on it. It is a sermon on the mount. Over and over again, he says, happy are, happy are, happy are, blessed are. And if you want to be happy, Jesus said, happy are the peacemakers. Why? They will be called the children of God. In your life, when you bring peace into a relationship, you are showing off the power of God in your life. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. The answer in a conflict is not to ignore it. It's not to fight unfair. It's not to prove how right you are. The answer in a conflict is to bring some peace so that you guys can be friends on the other side. And the only way that I know how to do that is to have some rules of engagement. The rules of engagement are simply the rules. It's before a boxing match where the referee says, you're both professionals. Here are the things we're going to do. Here are the things we're not going to do. And for my marriage, there are some rules that Monica and I have. You're welcome to borrow these. You can steal them. You can apply them to your relationships, or you can ignore them. You can come up with your own. I would not recommend, though, you just sit there and just nod your head. I would recommend that you take some thought and say, in my relationships, specifically in relationships where there is some conflict, what are the rules that we can have to make sure that we're still friends on the other side of the conflict? And so these are some rules. You're welcome to borrow them. Maybe they'll apply to you, but if they don't, come up with your own rules of engagement. Here's some things that my wife and I decided before we have a fight. These are the things we're going to make sure that we cover. Here are some do nots for your rules of engagement. Number one, do not name call. Do not name call. We got this rule our very first year of marriage. In our first year of marriage, we were hanging out with an older couple who'd been married for years, and while we were hanging out with them, I made this off-the-hand comment that Monica and I had never called each other a name yet. But I said yet because I was implying that at some point we're going to get so mad we're going to call each other names. We'd only been married for a few months, and so like we hadn't, you know, we were still in the honeymoon phase, and I just, you know, we haven't yet called each other names. And as soon as I said it, the room got like awkwardly quiet. And this was like a godly couple. Like this was a couple that had been married for a long time. This was a couple that Monica and I wanted to model our relationship after. This was a really good couple. But the room got awkward, and so I asked about it, and the wife said that she wished that on day one of their marriage, they would have had a rule that said no name calling. Because they didn't have that rule, she said, there are times when we've gotten so angry, we've ended up saying, you're being so stupid. You're so selfish. I don't understand how you can be so forgetful. And she said that we end up putting names on people's behavior and calling them things. And she said the very first time that we did it, we felt bad about it. Like, oh, I can't believe I said that about my spouse, and I'm so sorry. But after years of marriage, when these behaviors are unchecked, they went from starting off as saying something like, you're being stupid, to saying, you are stupid. And they changed their whole language. They ended up speaking to their spouse like they wouldn't even speak to their enemies because they didn't have a rule. And so she said, I wish we would have that rule. So Monica and I said from day one, a rule we're going to have is we're not going to name call. And if you're not married, you can apply this to your friendships. You can apply this to your coworkers. Like, this is a rule we're going to have. It's not that you're being stupid. Your behavior may be stupid, but I'm not going to label you as being stupid. I'm not going to name call. It's just going to make the situation worse. Number two, do not raise your voice. A do not rule of engagement is do not raise your voice. When I get passionate, I start to raise my voice. And when I get defensive, I start to raise my voice. And when I think that you haven't heard me, I start to raise my voice. Here's what happens, though, when you raise your voice. When you start to yell, you communicate to the other person that you're not a safe person to have conflict with. Because you're instilling fear in them. And it's not about that conflict that you're having. What you're saying is, from now on in the future, don't bring conflict to me because I'm going to end up yelling to you. And what's going to happen, I promise you, if you're a yeller, if you're a screamer, if you're one that raises your voice, I promise you that over years, the people around you are going to be deathly afraid to bring anything up to your attention. Even things that need to be talked about. Because they're going to be thinking, it's just not worth it. I don't want to get yelled at. There's a problem that needs to be solved, but it's too tense. I don't want to be screamed at. I don't want to deal with that, so I'd rather just deal with this awkward tension than bring it up to them. Well, what if you had a rule that said, we're just not going to raise our voice? And maybe you have to give yourself a timeout. Maybe you have to say, hey, I'm getting so angry right now, I'm about to throw something, so I'm just going to pull a Zach Morris and give a timeout. Save the bell, Zach Morris, anyone with me? You guys are totally asleep. Awesome. Zach Morris, I'm going to give a timeout. And I'm going to go to the other room, and I'm going to calm down. And give me 15 minutes, and we're going to come back and talk about it so that I'm not yelling and screaming. Do not raise your voice. Here's another rule of engagement, number three. Do not bring up the past. Do not bring up the past. Bringing up the past is an unfair fighting tactic. It is biting the opponent's ear in a boxing match. It should not happen at all, ever. Here's what bringing up the past is. Bringing up the past is, I'm losing this argument, so I got to find a way to win. So yes, I forgot to do this, or I wasn't where I was supposed to be, but let me remind you what you did last week. And now let's talk about that. And now I'm winning the fight, but you're really losing because you're not solving the problem. And a simple rule of engagement says, we're not going to bring up the past. The past is in the past. I've forgiven you. I've moved on. This is our problem. Let's stay right here and talk about this. Let's not go to the past. Do not bring up the past. A fourth rule, do not use absolutes. Do not use absolutes. My wife and I stumbled upon this one our first year of marriage. She said to me one night, after asking me to take out the trash and me not moving quite as fast as she wanted me to move, she made the comment that I never take out the trash. And as soon as I heard the word never, I got incredibly defensive. And I started building a case of all the times that I had taken out the trash. I was like, look, I've taken out the trash 3 times this week, and the problem's not the trash, it's that you throw away too much stuff, and you need it. And like, we're arguing about how often I take out the trash, and it was pointless because it didn't solve the problem. You want to know what solved the problem? My wife and I went to Amazon, and we bought the biggest trash can in the history of trash cans. It is like this wide, and it is this tall, and I only have to take out the trash twice a week now, and that solved the problem. But arguing about how often I took out the trash did not solve the problem. And you should not use words like you always or you never. It is adding fuel to a fire. And the truth of the matter is, when you say always or never, it is never true. That's an absolute that is true. But all the other absolutes are not true, but that one is true. Because if you say you never do this, there are examples of when they have done it. And when you say you always forget, there are times when they didn't forget. So talk about the problem. Don't throw absolutes in there. It adds fuel to the fire. Here's some things to do. So these are some rules of engagement to do. Number one, do stay on target. Stay on target. What is going to solve this problem? You're not attacking the person. You're attacking a problem. So stay on target. We have an issue. It is causing friction and tension. You keep forgetting to do this, or we keep fighting about money. We keep fighting about the same thing. So what is our target? Our target is, let's get a budget. Let's focus on that. Or our target is, let's get you home at a certain time. Or our target is, this is the solution to our problem. Let's stay on target. Let's not go around it. Let's not attack each other. Let's stay on target. Number two, do encourage. How different would your confrontations be if you started off saying, hey, I just want to tell you how much I love you. You are my absolute best friend. I want what's best for you. I believe in you. You are such a great wife. You are such a great husband. You are my best friend. You are a great kid. What would happen to our kids if we told them how much we believed in them and we just encouraged the mess out of them? I think that before you have a conflict, it should involve an encouragement sandwich, that you do some encouragement before, you bring up the conflict in the middle, and then you do encouragement at the end. That you're just encouraging them, pouring encouraging words, that I believe in you. There's some tension, but I know we can work through it because of how much I love you and how much you love me. Number three, do affirm the other person. Do affirm the other person. What does it mean to affirm the other person? It means that you're listening to what they have to say. You may disagree with them completely, but it's simply just saying, if I hear you correctly, you're saying that you feel like I do this. And you're not going to get defensive. You're going to apologize. I'm sorry. I blew it. I hear what you're saying. I'm going to affirm your belief. Even if you disagree with what they're saying, you're going to affirm what they're saying. And the last rule to do, the rule of engagement, is do pray together. Do pray together. I don't know how to be mad at someone and pray with them. I don't know how. If you know how to do that, you've learned something that I don't know how to do. When I'm mad, if I talk to God, it's not like with that person. It's about that person. Dear God, they are so annoying. You need to bring down fire from heaven on them. Like, I don't know how to sit in your presence and talk to God with you if I'm angry with you. So pray with them. And if you're at a job where it's a secular job and you can't bring prayer into it, you better be sandwiching that meeting in prayer. Before you go into the meeting, God, would you give me favor with them? Would you give me grace? Would you help me to bite my tongue? Would you help me to solve the problem? And when the meeting's done, you pray for them. God, would you guard their mind? Would you help them to know I had their best interest in mind, that I wasn't angry at them, I'm not bitter at them. God, would you help? Would you be a part of this situation? You pray. You ask God to be a part of it. Here's your application. This is what you can do with this. This is what you have to do, your part. Now that you've heard it, this is what you can do. Today, set up your own rules of engagement. with the people you are closest to. Today, don't wait till tomorrow. Don't wait for next week. Don't wait till you've had an argument. You're going to fight with people that you're close with. So set up some rules of engagement. It can be two of them. It doesn't have to be as many as I have. But set up a couple rules of engagement that are going to help you before you get into your next fight. Today, set up your own rules of engagement with the people you're closest to. The people you work with, the people you're friends with, the people that are in your family, set up some rules of engagement. We pray. God, thank you so much for giving us something practical that we can chew on and wrestle with. And God, would you just give us this grace that we need? Would you help us to, God, work hard at coming up with some rules of engagement so that we could have some healthy relationships? God, would you just stir something in us? Would you give us this discipline today to carve out some time, to set up a date, to set up a meeting where we can talk with people that we have conflict with and that we can set up some mutually agreed upon rules of engagement? And would you help us to do this, God, not because we're awesome, but so that we can point people to how awesome you are? Would you help us to have some healthy marriages and healthy friendships and healthy working environments? God, will we be an example to the rest of the world? God, we just ask that you'd speak to our hearts, that you'd tell us what we need to do, and you'd give us the courage to do it. In Jesus' name.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.